The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and brought to you by Kornblau & Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process, Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Appropriately. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged, and Kinetic Skateboarding, get 9.1% off your first order with code Dave Silver. On the show today, Sixers hang tough against the Cavs, but end up losing in crushing fashion again. Joel Embiid looks to be on the verge of return. Will Tyrese Maxey make an all-NBA team, thereby changing his max contract? And has Bryce Harper's pandering finally gone too far with yesterday's clothes that he wore to the game? Pretty extreme. Kinetic Skateboarding, I mentioned. CJ, could you put up that vest? I have mentioned this vest that Kinetic has, and they didn't make a lot of them, and there are a few left. I would recommend getting one. It is, so I have the black Kinetic vest, which is awesome, but this is a tan Dickies one. Big Dickies guy, embroidered with the Kinetic logo, heading into spring. It's vest weather. I'm telling you, it's vest weather for the next several months. Go to kineticskateboarding.com. Look at the pocket on the inside, so you can hide your weed in there, I guess. I don't know. What do you do with the inside pocket? Put your keys in there. Anyway, this is sweet, along with all of the Kinetic brand stuff that I love at kineticskateboarding.com. Use code Dave Silver. And by the way, if you're just listening to this, if you go to the video, you can see the one I'm talking about. Go to kineticskateboarding.com. Use code Dave Silver for 9.1% off your first order. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef. Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who has risen this weekend, Mr. Moral Victory himself. That is Mike Levin.
My mouse and keyboard stopped working. The Bluetooth connection lost for a second, so I thought I'd have to do my notes with most of them covered, except for just Mo Bamba and B-Ball Paul's notes. So that would have been an interesting podcast if I just
wouldn't have been that bad.
What the rest? Yeah, we're fine.
These fucking games.
Tough loss. A string of a couple tricky losses. This is a good Cavs team with Donovan Mitchell back. They're at full strength, but like they just ball watch too much as a team, especially with like Sam Merrill and George Niang getting hot, making them pay. There was one time that Maxey just fully spaced and George beat him backdoor. Should have won that game. I mean, with a better Maxey game or a better Oubre game, they win, because everybody else kind of did their job.
Maxey was like 7 of 26, I think, something like that. Oubre, what, 2 of 11, 3 of 11, something like that.
Yeah.
They hung tough. The defense thing, they've gotten credit, and Nick Nurse has mentioned, for them playing better defense over the last several weeks.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to figure out how much better it is relative to the rest of the league, who I think has probably all had the ability to play better defense as fouls have been called less. So I would love to see their defensive rating. I assume I could do this very easily. Their defensive rating, like the last 3 or 4 weeks over the previous 3 or 4 weeks. So I don't know if their defense has been better relative to the rest of the league or just better relative to how they were playing. But I didn't think Niang was ever going to miss a shot last night. And same with Sam Morrill. Is that his name?
Merrill.
Yeah. Like, didn't think he was ever going to miss a shot. And yeah, I thought they played tough. It was nice. They kept in it the entire time. I don't know. Like, I don't know what the fuck to say about these games anymore. I do think Bamba has played better overall. I thought sure. B-Ball played one of his strongest halves of the year in the second half. I thought he was really good. But overall, like, we know who everybody is. Like, they just need Embiid back. And that's all I think watching these things. And yeah. how nice it would be to win one of them. If they're going to get to that sixth seed, which we'll get to later, like, pulling off games like the last two would be nice.
Yeah, seems unlikely at this point. Seems much more just to accept the fact that they're going to probably play Miami or Indiana in the play-in and probably on the road. The defense, I do think, is better. I do think they're playing more physically. I do think Kyle Lowry has, and Nick Batum both being healthy, has helped just like the connectivity of it and people getting familiar with each other more. Last night was just a real example of confirming my priors, which is one of my favorite things to do, that like a catch and shoot open three is a better and easier shot for NBA players than step backs off the dribble when they're contested.
Yes. Yeah.
And George Niang, 5 of 8 from three, wide open. Sam Merrill, 4 of 8 from three, almost wide open. Max Strus, 2 of 4 from three, almost wide open. Evan Mobley, 2 of 2 from three, wide open. And Garland and Mitchell, who didn't have those open looks because they were covered, 1 of 4, 1 of 7. And I just don't, there's just this thing about thinking, you know, oh, they can't get this pass off, or we can recover in time to get back to the open shooter to make it hard. And I just don't agree. I just really don't, especially Tobias, man. Like, there was one time, it seems like he's surprised when an NBA player can make that pass because he can't make that pass, or he doesn't have that vision. And so he tags a big that's already tagged. I think it was Jared Allen. I think, yeah, Maxey was down there, which is obviously not a great situation, but you're also not helping to be behind Jared Allen for a lob. And instead, Darius Garland makes the pass to George Niang. Tobias is 20 feet away from him and he hits an open three, and three is more than two. And that's what he's on the court to do. Like, we know Niang is good. And just, it's just, there's so much of that. There's so much of that where it's just like, hey, one pass from an incredible ball handler to an open shooter that is on the court to do exactly that. I know I'm a broken record, but it sucks. It just bums me out.
When defense is bad lately, such a nothing play.
Send the guy in front of you.
No help.
Too often,
no help.
Like, stands and watches other guys.
No help.
We may as well try.
No help.
Is it going to work? I don't think it's going to work. It didn't work.
I didn't even say over help. I didn't even say the word help.
Yeah, but
I didn't even say double team. I didn't say any of it.
You know, it was a fair one.
I was beating around the bush.
There. Yeah.
So that was frustrating. There was one time, I mean, yeah, Kelly Oubre loses track of his guy. I really think, like, a very good on-ball defender. I mean, similar to Tobias, Oubre is obviously has stronger hands and is longer and can contest better. But
moves his feet better,
absolutely. Yeah. But Oubre loses track of his guy regularly off ball because he starts ball watching, and then he runs into Sam Merrill for a 4-point play because he has to, like, he can't take those short steps because he's so far away from him, because guys do a better job of relocating than the Sixers do of keeping track of him. But I do think Tobias had a couple of nice plays with the ball on defense, on ball. He had stripped Mitchell at one point, one-on-one, which was a nice play. Had a couple of good plays with his hands. There was a time when Tobias got beat by an offensive rebound carom by Marcus Morris. Tobias gave the hint of boxing him out, and Morris just like beat him to the spot. And I'm like, that's inexcusable. that can't happen.
To get beat to a spot by Marcus Morris? Yeah.
I don't think it can happen.
Yeah.
I don't think it's allowed to happen.
Tobias has morphed back into normal Tobias. No.
Like, I mean, nine threes taken in a game?
Yeah, I guess. I just want to... Is this pen I have?
Yeah.
Every time we start talking about Tobias, I want to take this pen and jab it in my fucking eye. Okay. Because I can't believe we're talking about it again. That's not a statement about you at all.
It's a statement about us and everything.
I just want to take this pen and put it in my own throat. so it will distract us from talking about fucking whether Tobias is good or not. I can't take it anymore.
Well, I don't think we're doing the whether Tobias
conversation. You know what I mean.
There's too many of those. But if Embiid was not coming back this season,
Oh my God.
I would cancel the podcast. It would be over. Yeah. It would be just like, see you guys, we're taking a hiatus.
Yeah.
See you guys someday in the future. See you guys for the lottery. But because he is, I do think this is still, there's still valuable information to be gleaned for the coaching staff and for Daryl and Elton and for us to be like, what is going to be interesting when the team does matter again?
I would agree that it is, it's just not entertaining. It's just,
I thought last game's game was a great game. I actually enjoyed myself quite a bit. I watched it late knowing that they had lost, so it was already that was the case. But
it's different when you know what happens, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'm watching knowing it happens going, and I've said this before, where I'm like, maybe everyone's playing a trick on me. Maybe everyone got together and decided, let's fool Mike.
Well, it's like those games where I can't tell you how many times I've thought about Alshon Jeffrey catching that fucking pass from Nick Foles.
Sure.
So let me ask you this. We've been through 2 months of non-Embiid. We've seen some pretty awful stretches from them. Who do you feel better about, if anyone, today than when Embiid went out? Like, do you feel like they've evolved in any way? I think Bamba's probably playing better now, like over the last couple of weeks. B-ball seems to have, you know, settled into a groove. But I don't know if there's anyone else that I feel any different about on the team. Is there anyone for you?
I feel absolutely, not that I was low on him before, but I feel better about Maxi for sure.
Really?
I think the idea, look, bad shooting games are going to happen. He was 2 of 12 from 3. He didn't get to he got to line once last night, and I don't remember it, so maybe it's even a technical foul or something. I don't remember.
He did missed a technical free throw.
So he didn't even get to the line.
He's missed every technical free throw this year. In my stats, in my head, I think he's missed every one. But
I think the responsibility he's had to take on without Joel for these 30 games or whatever, as he's getting doubled and blitzed and taken out of the game and the whole game plan being about him, I do think that is making him a better player and will almost be like when you take the donut off of a bat and you start swinging it, and all of a sudden when Joel's back, he's going to be like, oh my God, nobody's coming. I'm here. All I have to do is beat like friggin' who are they going to play? I mean, Dame off the dribble. Yes, I can do that. Absolutely. See you later. I think that's going to be helpful. And I think his defense has really improved. There was the unreal two-way play in that last minute. Again, they should have won this game. He's guarding Garland down one. He pokes it out from behind. Matisse style. He gets a run out with Mobley going stride for stride. And he finds a way after the hit ahead to just sneak it up there. And Garland is a top 20-25 offensive player. Evan Mobley is a top 10-15 defensive player. And that's the same play. That's a really, really good play and a veteran play from a guy that keeps getting better. I didn't love the last play for Maxi. There was still like, I think I watched so much college basketball.
It's just the step back, you mean?
Well, it was they get the ball down three.
Yep.
They have a timeout.
They don't take it. Yep.
Fine.
I'm fine with that, honestly. It gives not giving the defense. I feel like Maxi has a better chance of the play going for him if they do not call a timeout. Would be my
if it was
gut.
A 2-point game, yes. In a 3-point game, Buddy Hield wasn't on the floor there. I would have liked to have Buddy Hield on the floor. Maxi at that point was 2 of 11 from three. He was not hitting on the night. I would have liked to either, if you're not going to call a timeout, there's still enough time to get a quick two. I'm not a quick two guy generally, but there's at least enough time to make the defense think you're going to get a quick two. So you can drive, see if a big comes over, and then you can kick it out to an open shooter, which obviously I would prefer. But when you're doing step back, step back, step back, like he was stepping back several times over the course of that play to try to see if he could shake free.
Yeah.
And when the defense knows that you're now committed to getting the three, that's just a really, really tough shot to make. That's a really tough shot to make, especially at 40 on your 43rd minute of the game when he's not shooting well already. So I would have preferred a driving kick to somebody else. If you have to get a quick two, there's still 5 or 6 seconds left or a timeout where you get better shooters in there to actually run a play. Because I've liked a lot of, I've been trying to focus on more of like Nick Nurse drawn up plays, just to see like, well, this is interesting. It's more compelling. That what is Nick can't control that he has three or four of his best players not there. Obviously, Joel. But let's see what he runs. And there was one play early in the game, a really nice set to get a Tobias three up, where Maxi has the ball up top. Mo Bamba and Tobias are positioning themselves like they're about to set a double screen for him. But then Maxi rejects the screen, goes the other way, and then Bamba turns to screen Toby's guy. And then Maxi makes the pass to Toby, and he steps into a straightaway three with a lot of space. I thought that was really cool. That's a cool play. It's cool to see it. It's cool to see them execute it. I do think Tobias, his mid-range was pretty good in this one. I like to see him operate at the nail, get the pen ready. But, you know, hitting mid-range shots and taking nine threes, like that's a good Tobias game for me. And I think it was on purpose of Nick Nurse to get him like, hey, we're drawing up this play where you step into a three. And I like seeing that.
I'll tell you actually, after we talk about Kornblau, I'll tell you the player I feel better about, honestly. There's one specific player that we have not mentioned that to feel better about. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast brought to you by Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process. I ask you, Mike, if I took the pen and jabbed it in my own eye,
yeah,
obviously I will have done that action, but would I be able to hold Tobias or you or the Sixers liable for me being forced to jab my own eye with the pen?
I think it's certainly possible and it's worth a consultation.
And you know who you would consult with? That'd be Kornblau. Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process. The premier boutique personal injury law firm in the Delaware Valley. He's going to come to you. He has offices all over Delaware Valley, right? He'll come to you, house call, right? And also, he's the one like doing the law. You see all these billboards, hear these commercials. They're like, call our law firm. And then you call them and they're like, we're going to farm you out to somebody else because we don't even practice law in the state that you're in. They're all shams. They're referral services, these personal injury law firms you hear from. Kornblau and Kornblau, legit. Been doing it for four decades and nobody does it better. The guy is fucking obsessed with getting you what you deserve. He's obsessed with it. He loves it. He loves his job. Also, personal injury lawsuits, they take a really long time. They're very complicated. You need someone who's going to be communicative, who is going to understand that it's stressful for you. Kornblau is right there too. If you've been hurt in any sort of way, slip and fall, injured at work, car accident, medical malpractice, which they are experts at, consultation, free, doesn't cost you anything. He's your guy. Give him a call, 215-576-7200, ask for Adam, or email Kornblau at kornblau.com, K-O-R-N-B-L-A-U, Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process. The player I feel better about is actually like Embiid, to be quite honest with you.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is, we know this, we know it intellectually, that he has that effect on the other players, but it is wild to have them go from one of the best teams in the NBA to literally a 33 win team with him out of the game. The effect he has on every player, how much better Maxi is when he's on the court, how much better Batum is when he's on the court. Honestly, how it puts Oubre into his proper role, you know, like Hield has looked like in his time here, I thought to myself, how would anyone even conceive of giving him $20 million a year? And I bet you when Embiid is on the court with him, we are going to look at him and go, oh my God, you know, this guy, the same way Redick, you know, had his best seasons, the same how Seth Curry looked. So I'm excited to get Embiid back. I know I've been sort of apprehensive about how he'll look. And I think deep in my belly, it's there just because of him coming back from injury. He has never looked great during the season, but I am I'm more optimistic than I had been just because of how good this time has, how much this time has shown how good he is.
I mean, he's the best.
Yeah.
Guy's the man.
Yeah.
Liked the Sixers admin account tweeting Embiid eating the apple.
Yes. So
that's exciting. But I totally agree with you about Buddy. Like, you know, he's playing 18 minutes a game. I think Nick Nurse is basically like, all right, just stay fresh. You kind of don't matter enough right now. And maybe he will when Embiid gets back. When he's more open, it's going to be very good. He's so automatic.
When he's open, it goes in every time. He's like,
he doesn't need to jump. It's so easy. There's no wasted motion.
It's the same way that it felt with Merrill and and Niang last night that if they're open, you're like, oh, there's no way this isn't going in. Like, buddy, I feel the same way when it's open.
And I want to give him credit. I said it last podcast. Happened again in last night's game. I want to give Buddy credit for getting a few games in a row where he's gotten more loose balls. He had 4 offensive rebounds last night in 18 minutes. Okay. And I just think like that kind of player that is just, you know, shooting specialist, secondary ball handler kind of, doesn't usually do that. And it's to have other guys steal you a possession is nice. And I just want to give him credit for doing that. That leads me to B-Ball Paul, who I just love, dude. I'm just not going to give it up.
Well, offensive rebound-wise, he was fighting again for those last night, which was 100%. Awesome. Yeah.
5 offensive rebounds in 26 minutes. He's always seems to be pretty good against Evan Mobley. I thought he did a nice job against him defensively. Evan didn't take a shot until the third quarter. And I think that I would have preferred to finish with B-Ball over Bamba. Bamba gave up a couple plays to Evan Mobley just because he's not quick enough to stay with him. And, you know, he didn't contest a corner three because he knows that if he steps up into it, then Mobley's just going to drive right by him.
Yeah, to be clear, Bamba has looked better offensively. Defensively, he's blocked a couple shots, but other than that, he's not been great.
Yeah, and I do think Bamba was pretty good last night. Obviously, 6-7 from the floor. I felt like a good mix of finishes at the rim and trail threes. I like
that. No floaters.
As an outlet, no floaters, which is good. You know, Campaign found Bamba rolling a few times, which previously they never seemed to reward a big rolling like that. Lowry hit him with, obviously, his daily alley-oop, which was always, again, very sick. Like, it's crazy how almost to go from no alley-oops to Lowry and Bamba connecting on a sick one every time was very nice. Yep. Maxi hit him with an alley-oop. It was nice. But yeah, I mean, this is the Bamba experience is, it seems like he gets out-muscled, out-physicaled, and Mobley he just needs to be more imposing with his length, and it feels like guys on ball are not that scared of him. Maybe in him coming over on a drive deters an attempt at the rim, but it seems like Mobley was not scared of shooting over him, and then he had to switch onto Garland, something that B-Ball would be much more comfortable with, and Bamba late in the game gets embarrassed by Garland, leaves him in the dust. It's a real. I do think the offense has been good, but I think the defense is not consistent enough to where I would really ever play him at the end of a game like that. But not to say B-Ball's perfect, even though he is a perfect young man. There was like a stretch of play when B-Ball would do something bad and then decide, I got to make up for that. Right the next play after, there was like, he had 2 turnovers in the same play one time and then stole it back like 2 plays later. And then he makes a really awful turnover and then blocks a George Niang 3 that there was no business he had getting to. It's really the full B-Ball experience. And that's what I was talking about with Buddy, is like, he just steals extra possessions for them. And I love that in a role player. I want that in a role player. And extra possessions a lot of times means offensive rebounds, which B-Ball does, or deflections and steals and that kind of thing. But it's also, this is not so much a B-Ball thing, but like a timely cut from a role player that steals them. Like, that would have been a turnover or a shot clock violation. All of a sudden, like, Oubre cuts in a way that opens something up. And that's going from a wasted possession to a good bucket. I love that. There was one play, B-Ball forces a Donovan Mitchell travel. This is the difference between B-Ball and Bamba in a pick and roll. Is B-Ball is just quick enough, and with both his legs and his arms, which Bamba, obviously, we've talked about this a lot, very slow arms, some of the slowest arms that we've ever seen.
So he should just keep them up.
Should have them up at all times. There's no reason to get a surgery so he doesn't need to put them down, something. But B-Ball's dropping on a Donovan Mitchell pick and roll. Batum doesn't help from the corner. Batum stays home in the corner. I think it was on Niang or Max Strus. B-Ball's in between Mitchell and Jared Allen and just does a little bit enough of a like jab at Mitchell to where Donovan is caught between, like, should I take a floater or should I make this pass? And he ends up coming down with it and traveling. And I just like that kind of intuitive, heady play that's not just slow reaction time. You're on your back foot for everything, and the ball handler and the pick and roll can just pick you apart. It is nice to see, like, a couple moments here and there where you just go, like, that little movement, that little thing that you did there, you're not just at the mercy of good offense. You can steal something. And I love that play. And I also love the play where he hit a corner three in this game. God bless him, B-ball. And one time he pump faked out of a corner three, drives on Jared Allen and muscles him in for a tough layup. There was physicality in B-ball's game last night against two guys that are good rim protectors. And he got to the line five times. That was one of the more physical games of B-ball's career, not just on the offensive glass, which there kind of always is, but with the ball in his hands around the rim, not just trying to do twirly up and unders. Like, he was getting in there, and I love that.
I know he did increase his vertical by 50. 40 inches or whatever, yeah, the 50. Last offseason. The one thing I would like him to do before next season is put on 10 pounds. I think I saw him get muscled once by Niang. And look, Niang is a big guy, but the B-ball is pretty slight. And I do think that, he's evolving into the player we think he is. And I do think his best role is still backup center, even though he's a little undersized. I think if he put on a little size, I think it would be very advantageous for him, especially for what he is good at, like all that offensive rebound stuff, those hustle plays, all that kind of stuff. If he was a little bit stronger, I think it would be huge for him. But I did think he was great last night. You
shooting 37.7% from three.
Amazing. On how many attempts a game?
Like doesn't
one
matter.
Or
who cares? Something.
Yeah.
Who cares? He should be shooting 10 a game.
Before we get to Embiid, you mentioned Maxi. So Maxi will be, his contract ends after this year. And he is eligible for, a max, new contract or whatever. Interestingly, if he doesn't make an all-NBA team, this is per Bobby Marks, the total of the five-year deal can be $204 million. If he makes an all-NBA team, the total of his deal is $245 million.
Yeah, that's the difference.
Which is very significant.
I don't think he's going to make one.
So I'm looking at the guards, right? I Shea gets in there as a guard, Brunson, definitely, Booker, Curry, but then you get Anthony Edwards, that's five. That's when it gets tough after that, though, because you have Dame, you have De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah,
you
Fox,
have,
I was going to say.
Whether Doncic gets in really is like a...
Could be either way.
Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown. So it's going to be close. I don't think he'll get in. I do think if he went on a heater for the last eight games, I still think it's within reach, but I don't think he gets in.
Yeah, I think he made an all-star team this year. That was sick. It's an honorable mention type of deal. If the Sixers were a top three seed, then he probably would have if Embiid had stayed healthy or if he had carried them. Obviously, he's carried them as much as he could, but if they had stayed more above water in this time,
I think
they
would
have given him credit. But
for
I think
sure.
This sort of solidifies that like he can't lead a team by himself to be a legitimate playoff threat. And that's fine. No, that's more than someone should ask for him at this stage of his career. But I think that it probably won't result in an all-NBA team, which for him, bummer. Hopefully something to grow to next year. For the Sixers and their cap space situation, unfortunately, a good bit of news. I do think last night, even though he didn't do it at the last play of the game, he did, because he was struggling shooting early, he did start to drive to kick and they got good offense out of it. It was cool to see him with that mindset going in. I also want to just shout out, I tried to say it in the last podcast, but never got to it. He squares up so nicely. And it's not something we talk about a lot as a skill, but the ability to square up and stay square gives him a shot to hit from so many different angles. Donovan Mitchell has that too. It's one of the things I like so much about Donovan coming out of the draft.
It looks very purposeful too, the way that he does it.
Yeah.
There's
a purposeful bounce. I mean, Devin Booker is obviously like the key to it. Like Kyrie does the same thing. Like there's just guys that really get balance, get square, and Maxi does a great job of it. And also uses the glass so well in different ways. And I think that's why he's kind of like a quarterback who, if somebody's taking away an arm angle because there's a blitzer, all of a sudden he hits you with a little sidearm and you're like, where the fuck did that come? How did you do that? And him being able to do that with touch in as fast as he's going is always so crazy. I do think we should mention how good of a game Kyle Lowry had.
I say he's good every time.
Yeah. He almost pretty much, I mean, he's 4 of 8 from three.
Yeah.
The when he gets a three early, and he had one in the, I think they, maybe in the first bucket of the game, or one of them was a three. When he gets him, he really starts to get going. It gives him confidence for the rest of the game. And there was a lot of downhill juice in this one from him. A lot. He was 3 of 4 on twos, which he doesn't take that many usually. He pulled up for a few like heat check mid ranges, which felt like a little more old school Kyle Lowry. And he's always going to, he's going to bait you into a cheap foul. With the ball in his hands, there's going to be at least one. And I like having that on our team. He has, I thought that's who you were going to say when you said, who do you have more faith in with the non-Embiid stuff? I thought you were going to say Lowry. Embiid is also the right answer, obviously. But the, but I do, I'm really excited to see the Lowry-Embiid pairing with how many good looks Kyle gets for himself or for other players just by Embiid being there and there being like a big, you know, to use a chess metaphor from our friend LeBron, like Embiid being the queen and having being able to use all the other pieces on the board to get easy looks because the threat of the queen is so real. I loved it. I thought Kyle was great. I'm so happy he's a Sixer. I'm so happy that he signed. They finally got a good buyout guy. Like, yeah, when does that ever happen?
Yeah.
And that's why post trade deadline, we were more negative about the Papev deal. But if you had guaranteed me in that moment that you were going to get Kyle Lowry and campaign, which he has helped at least stem the tide of some of these injuries, then I would have been way more high on it. But the idea of Lowry actually finally deciding to come here and a buyout guy actually helping as much as he's helped has been great. I mean, yes, the Embiid thing, injury bummer. Hopefully he gets a 2 weeks or so to work himself back into it. But like, I have thought for a lot of this year that this is the best supporting cast that Embiid has had.
Yeah, it's just hard to say. It's hard. I understand what you're saying. I'm mostly on board. It's just so hard to get your head there.
Yeah.
When you just watch them lose game after game.
For sure. It's hard to assume Embiid full health and he used to. But yeah, they're less capable of winning non-Embiid games.
But maybe more capable of winning
more
Embiid
capable
games.
Of winning the Embiid games,
yeah.
At a high level because of how well the pieces fit. I also wanted to say that. Oh, sorry. No, you go ahead.
It just would have been nice if they stayed keep their heads a little bit more above water than they are. I would have loved them to stay in the six rather, you know, but it is what it is, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to come down to can you win one play-in game to get yourself out of the eight?
Right.
Because there's no difference between the six and the seven because the two and the three are so close to each other, whether it's Cleveland or Milwaukee, yeah. Probably. If they can win one game on the road in Miami, who beat Portland by 60 last night, which is fun, then they're in really good shape and we can feel positive about it. But it's playing central. So it's so weird this has been a weird season with injuries and acquisitions, and these guys just haven't played together that much, a lot of them. So it's going to come down to winning one game I guess they could lose to Chicago also, but
or we bring the lottery party back.
Or it's the lottery party back, or it's Boston round one. So
the Rice Ricky Sanchez podcast brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Have a Big Barker, a couple of Big Barker surprises coming up in the next couple of weeks. Actually, some things I've been working on with Big Barker. While you wait for that, the greatest thing about Big Barker is clearly that it keeps your dog healthier and happier. Legitimately, a bed keeps you healthier and happier. Go to bigbarker.com/Ricky, bigbarker.com/Ricky. You go there, you can learn about what a great bed it is. Also, if you go to that link, you get the two process pup patches, which makes your dog official process pups. You have to think to yourself, how does a bed keep a dog healthier? And it just, all you have to do is think about yourself. If you slept on a poor, thin, old mattress or slept on the floor like dogs do all the time, slept on a pillow all the time, you would be less healthy. Your back would hurt all the time. Your joints would ache. And the more that you did it, the worse that you would feel. Just a fact. But if you sleep on a great mattress, you feel better. I got a good mattress 10 years ago. I switched mattresses to something more expensive and good, and I feel so much better because of it. Forget about the fact that I needed a new hip. Damage was already done. Dogs, the same way. Big Barker therapeutic dog beds are the only ones engineered by experts to keep your dog healthier, keep their joints in better shape, help stave off the symptoms of arthritis as they get older. And the more your dog can sleep on a Big Barker, the earlier you can get your dog the Big Barker, the better. Helps for older dogs, helps for younger dogs, helps for huge dogs, helps for smaller dogs. Big Barker dog beds. They also look better than the other ones. Come in any color you could need, look pretty cool in your bedroom, your living room, wherever you have it, And like I said, whatever size you need. 10-year warranty, the foam doesn't flatten or they replace it for free. 1-year at home trial. If you don't like it, if the dog won't sleep on it, it happens. Not a lot, but it happens. They'll pay for, they'll give you all your money back and they'll even pay for the shipping. Handmade in the USA. Big Barker dog beds.
Whoa!
So.
Two more things. Quick.
Oh,
things.
Jesus Christ. Are we still on this Cavs game?
I watched the Cavs broadcast.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the Cavs score bug? Should have sent it to CJ.
No.
Above the Cavs.
Shout out Serena Winners, by the way.
Shout out Serena. Above the Cavs logo at the bottom of the screen where it says like Sixers have this many points, Cavs have this many. There's a little smaller font where it says the diff.
Okay.
DIFF. Colon. And then how many points the Cavs are either winning by or losing by.
That's weird.
And so when it was like 50-50, it said the diff, zero.
Zero.
And it's smaller font. And so it's like, what really is the point of this?
Yeah.
Are you just assuming your audience has such bad math, but good eyesight?
Yes.
That would allow you to not be able to do simple math.
Yeah, 59.
That you
50.
Need right this very second, yeah. But also to squint to see that it was. So I that was interesting to me.
The score's 59-50, but I don't know how many they're down
yeah.
by.
Yeah, someone tell me what the diff is.
Please.
I want to note that Nick Batum has gone 5 of 9 from 3 in his last 2 games.
Okay.
After missing 77 straight, it felt like. So that's been nice. And I want to, we got a little Ricky Council run last night.
Yeah. He's hit a couple threes in his last couple appearances, by the way.
Hit, came in, immediately hits a sidestep corner three. That was like the issue for him coming into the draft, why he went undrafted.
A shot. And
was like how weird his shot was. He is so much more confident shooting than he was either in summer league or definitely at Arkansas. And then the next thing he needs to do is to learn to like... attack, but while still having options, like passing off of drives, not being so tunnel vision-y. And in this one, he did drive and kick to Buddy for an open corner three, which was nice. And he gets the line every fucking time, every goddamn time he's on the floor, he gets the line. And he played decent defense. I'm really, really very, if Daryl Isaiah Joe's this, who also went to Arkansas, if Daryl Isaiah Joe's this Ricky Council thing, I'm going to be very upset. I was only lukewarm on Ricky because I never really thought he'd be able to, the stuff he did at college, I didn't think that it would translate. And without the jump shot, like what really
he doesn't have like an
butter.
NBA skill yeah. without the jump shot. Right.
But the foul drawing is legitimate. And if the jumper is as consistent and confident as it has been, like this guy is a legitimate rotation player, like maybe even like a 6th-7th man type thing. And for an undrafted guy that kicks ass and they have so few guys under contract, I really want Ricky to stay here for a while. I don't want this to Isaiah Joe. I don't want at Fly the Process 2027 for some Ricky listener to come up to Daryl and be like, why'd you let Ricky go? He also is the name of this podcast. I'm just getting dangerously high on Ricky and I need him to stay. That's all.
I would like for him to stay. I'm less convinced that he's an NBA player, but I would still rather he be here than he not be here.
The athleticism plus the willingness to shoot plus the willingness to work hard on defense, get fouled. It's just like too many things that are good now at the NBA level to think that there's not something there. He's got plenty more stuff to clean up and get better at and the shot can be more consistent, et cetera. But
shooting,
like,
dribbling. Yeah.
But dribbling, but he has a knack for the dribbling is not, it's funky. There's like an Oubre-ness to him where he's getting that fucking rim, which I obviously like.
So Embiid, you mentioned the Sixers posted the Embiid eating the apple GIF. I continue to say GIF. I'm not a GIF guy. Are you a GIF guy?
I'm GIF also.
GIF guy. CJ, GIF guy, GIF guy.
GIF, hard G.
There we go. Thank you. Put it in.
The first 3 for 3 that this podcast has had in a long time.
Banning GIF is banned. And they also posted a photo of Embiid shooting a jumper over, who is it there? Is that b-ball? Looks like it might be b-ball. In practice, with the eyes emoji, we have a home game coming up on Tuesday against the Oklahoma City Thunder. That would give the Sixers 7 games remaining. Do you think he comes back on Tuesday? I mean, they are obviously, like, when the social media team is posting the stuff, it means it's coming. They're obviously, he's not going to play against Toronto as a first game, even though he's on the road trip. Is he back against OKC on Tuesday?
OKC is the last nationally televised Sixers game of the year.
Perfect. This is perfect.
I would love for there to be no more, but finally we're at the last one. Sixers Heat on a couple days later, which is obviously a big game.
Good game for Embiid to come back. You know, OKC is not a particularly big team, you know, come back, dominate a little bit.
But they're running so much. I don't know. I wouldn't mind if he just came back.
You were so sure you were picking dates out.
Well, I want him to come back tomorrow.
Okay.
Just fucking destroy the Raptors, who are trying to lose and have a center in Jonte Porter who can't play because he was, you know, doing prop bets about himself. So, which is tough.
Oh, that's right. The Sixers are now.
I like Jonte Porter too, which is a bummer.
Sixers are now 39-35. They would have to completely collapse to be out of the eighth seed. They're currently in the eighth seed. They're a game and a half out of 7 for the Heat, and they are 2 games in the loss column out of 6th with the Pacers. Their final 8 games: Toronto, OKC, Miami, Memphis, San Antonio, Detroit, Orlando, Brooklyn. So obviously OKC, Miami, Orlando, all real games. The other 5, all teams that you should beat, even though San Antonio's played better.
And that's on the second half of a back-to-back.
Yeah.
Grizzlies after the Spurs.
I guess the 6th seed really is not going to happen.
Pretty unlikely.
Yeah. They could get to, if they beat Miami, they could get to the 7. Would love to have that game at home.
Yeah. It'd be nice to do that and have some momentum. If I could pick... I mean, I guess being the 6th seed would be just nice and have a little break. But the juice of, hey, we beat Miami so we can be the 7th seed, and now it's Miami-Boston in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And Miami did lose the first play-in game last year.
Yep.
And almost lost to the Bulls in the second play-in game. That would feel very nice. That would feel spiritually nice because, A, that means Miami has lost the division to Orlando, which again would win me money because I only bet on Florida teams to win their division.
And what, you got them at plus 900 or something, or plus 800, something like that?
Yeah. Yep. Which I like. I like winning. And it would just feel the juice of that, the positivity of that, the like, we have Joel back and we just won this, like, you know, NCAA tournament style one game to advance. I mean, essentially a play-in game. The second one is really a game 7, but it's a kind of a game 7 vibe, and the Sixers don't win those. So
it'd be nice to win that.
It'd be nice to win that.
Yeah, it would.
I think the 6th seed is unlikely, but I could fathom a world where they, with Joel, just win one game in Miami. That would be really nice.
You know what? Actually, I'm kind of talking myself into this. Thinking about the baseball playoffs from last year and how the division winners struggled, and the teams that won the wild card, you know, rounds ended up being able to, I'm going to talk myself into the fact that the momentum created from a win over the Heat in the play-in would be better than not being in the play-in.
Say that.
It's better to be in the play-in. Give me the Heat.
Speak on that.
And CJ, clip that for when they don't even make the playoffs because they lose the Heat and then lose to the Bulls. But I believe it now.
It's real. It's very Phillies coded.
Yeah.
The little 3-game series against the Cardinals, Gene Segura jumping out of the dugout.
Yeah. Let's do it. Give me the fucking Heat.
Slapping it the other way.
Let's go through the fucking gauntlet of the fucking Heat and then give us Giannis and the Bucks and then give us
avoiding Boston. Not that gauntlet. The rest of the gauntlet.
Well, we would get Boston in the conference finals.
Oh wow, he's already making the bet. That now we're back to fan fiction. We're back to the fan fiction part of the podcast.
Let's fucking do it.
Or then we're just like bashing our dolls together. And be like, they win. We did it. That's how we're doing. I hope it happens.
Yeah. And then wrapping up this section of the pod, of course, Kelly Oubre with one of my favorite process moments ever, when he approached every ref and called them all bitch and called their families all bitches while pointing, as AU noted, that the full hand point was amazing.
Yeah.
Turned me into an Oubre guy. Kelly
Oubre. He does that when he's like an and one too.
Oh, really? He does point?
He's a full hand for everything, really. He's not much of a pointer.
And I just want to hint it, because I thought it was going to be ready by today, but it's not, because we got it done a little. But Abby did do a tribute to the Oubre moment for a shirt. We're going to get it up. But Abby did a great job, which is an excellent job.
Very nice. And Kelly apologized for it. And yes. It's ultimately like, but the refs should apologize.
Yes. Well, he said
he got fined. And it's like,
so he got fined $50,000
for not being able to hear the big loud horn.
Yeah. Both he
couldn't hear it. Can't do anything about it. Sorry, it's done.
This
is all made up. Why don't you just say like, hold on a second. You're all here. Just like chill for a second.
He and Nurse.
Let me check. It's insane.
He and Nurse got fined $50,000 each. Now, Oubre, look, making $1 million, or was he make $2 million?
It's like filing your taxes, where you're like, you didn't do it in the exact right way. You put one little number off and now you're jail. And it's like, we're making this up. A ref could have said, hang on one second. Let me just check. And someone would be like, well, he doesn't have challenges. Like, it doesn't really matter. The game's over. So it's either this foul happened with 0.2 or the game's over. So you guys just chill here for a second. And to be like, the letter of the law, fuck the letter of the law. Fuck it. It's stupid.
You're a bitch. You're a bitch.
There you go.
You're a bitch. So $50,000.
I thought it should have kept going. Great grandmother. I've looked up some, I've checked out the historical records. And I've determined
your brother-in-law's a bitch. Your cousin's a bitch. $50,000. That's a good bit of money for a guy making, you're making $50 million.
The refs should pay that.
No big deal, but you're making league minimum $50,000. That's fucking.
The refs association, the ref union should have to pay that as an apology.
The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast brought to you by LL Pavorsky Jewelers, the first sponsor in the history of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez. Been with us for years and years and years. Closing in on 400 Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners who have purchased engagement rings from LL Pavorsky. Of course, Mike has promised, if you would like, he will watch you and your fiance, if the engagement happens, consummate the relationship, if you would like. After refusing to have sex with the couple, he has agreed to watch. It's amazing closing in on 400 rings. That's really crazy. And we've met so many of them actually on Fly the Process. I was able to meet a bunch of Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners who have gone to LL for engagement rings. I didn't know Jack Fritz, my new co-host/producer at WIP, also an LL Pavorsky guy, and got a bunch of his buddies as well. Now, he doesn't think he should be counted as one of the Ricky people, and he doesn't think they should be counted as one of the Ricky people, which would be interesting going into LL's accounting on that. But LL is going to treat you absolutely amazing. You are going to get personalized service, no pressure, great price, great product as well, from an honest, great guy who's been doing it for a very long time, 36 years over at 707 Walnut. 36 years. If you'd like to buy an engagement ring, make an appointment with him. Give him a call, 215-627-2252. Email lee@llpavorsky.com. Tweet at him, @LLPavorsky. A supporter of our charities, Mama T's Community Fridge and Providence Animal Center, LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
I'm only watching if LL does too. He's also clothed. We're both in suits.
That would be great. So the Phillies lose their opener as the love watching Zach Wheeler. Don't so much love watching bullpen implode. Also don't so much love only scoring two runs, but one game, one of 162.
I'm ready to call it.
Call what?
Season over?
Yeah.
Done.
Isn't it great or not great? But one of the coolest things about baseball, I think, is when you can tell whether a pitcher has it or doesn't have it almost immediately.
Yeah.
Alvarado, I was just like, no, can't throw strikes. I feel it. Anyway, Bryce Harper shows up to the game. Now, Bryce Harper, famous panderer. I was critical of his pandering. Then I complimented his pandering. I talked to him about his pandering. he...
Well, wait, hang on. That's not the order.
Critical, positive, talk to.
Critical, talked to.
No. Anyone who listens to the pod, CJ, I don't know if you can affirm, eventually you said to me on the pod, it's better if he tries than if he doesn't try.
Yeah, that's true.
And I agreed. I said, okay. You're right. And he's won me over by his play and the fact that he never breaks kayfabe on the pandre. I feel like this jacket is just shoving at my fucking face. That jacket's a lot, Mike.
It's a lot.
It is a lot.
I don't know that it's pandering. Here's why it's not. It's his own jersey. Yep. Like if that was like Kruk,
yeah,
then I could see that.
So
but
if
the fact that it's his own.
If you're not looking at it, Bryce Harper wore a jacket that has his jersey. It's basically like something that you would get like in the parking lot or Foreman Mills or something that has all four teams involved, but isn't licensed. Yeah, yeah. So you can't buy it. So it has
4 for 4.
Yeah. It has the six, by the way, no union on his thing, but has his jersey, two Sixers jerseys, one from, it looks like,
That's Iverson, right? Excuse me. Yeah. CJ, scroll 90, left.
That's 96, 97 Sixers.
Yeah, that's a three.
Current Sixers, Eagles. And of course Flyers is on the hood. All patched together. Maybe it's made by that one football player's wife that makes all the jackets and stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. Jack's wife.
So is this too far with pandering?
No, looks comfortable. Hoodie weather. Still in there.
Wow. It's really far. I mean, he's really pushing it.
I think there's so much more of his body that could be pandering.
Yeah. There it is. We'll go Phils.
He's got it. I want him hitting 50 this year.
50 home runs?
I want 50.
I would rather have him. So we're going to switch roles on this one. The back thing makes me a little nervous.
Yeah.
Had a few injuries. I'd rather him play 140 games rather than 152 games or something. Rest up. Maybe not hit 50 home runs.
150 home runs in
140 games.
140 games.
Oh, sure. There's nothing wrong with that then. I'd be fine with that.
He just hasn't broken 35 homers since 2015. He's at 35 twice with the Phils.
Would love to, and he's at 300 home runs, right? I would love to see him get to 500 with the
306.
Phils. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that'd be dope. But yeah, I need just a magical run season. And he's obviously an incredible player and he takes a ton of walks and I love Bryce, but like having him have like a Ryan Howard power month
would be sick.
Would be really very cool.
Dom Brown power month.
Oh, don't say that to me.
It was a great moment.
I know.
Every Dom Brown home run, by the way, in that time barely got over the fence. Everyone in that one hot
that's
streak.
Not my, that's, I'm not, not disputing it. It's not my recollection of it.
Okay.
I just remember him he was swinging so fucking hard that month.
Yes.
God bless him. He was a different kind of player in the minors. And then he had that power month. So it's a Bobby Brady home run derby all over again.
833 lick face. We got
go
some
you can, fails, man.
You can leave us voicemails. You can send us emails. Voicemails is 833 lick face. Email is writesrickysanchez@gmail.com.
Hey, Spike and Mike, this is Jeremy from Pittsburgh. So I have two questions. My basketball question is, would you rather guarantee you can sign any free agent this offseason you want? Let's just say Paul George, because that's been what's coming up lately. Or remove one player from the Celtics for just the playoffs? And then my non-basketball question, would you rather have LeBron James as a Ricky guest or Tommy from JJ's podcast universe as a guest? Very dumb, but love you guys. Thank you.
Pros and cons.
Second question first. I would 1,000,000% rather have Tommy than LeBron.
I feel it, but I feel like if we really wanted Tommy, we could do that.
Can I tell you? Let me see if I can tell this story.
The idea of LeBron James coming on the Writes Ricky Sanchez podcast would be something special.
So can I tell this story without revealing? Yes, I can. So somebody who in history has been on this podcast was in communication with Tommy, was on the podcast, and Tommy remarked to this person, I saw that you went on the Rights to Ricky Sanchez. Those guys are not cool with us, or we are not cool with them, or something like that, or said something negative that all this person did was appear on our podcast, and Tommy Alter was just like, yo, fuck out of here with that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
You don't like JJ and talk about him regularly. I do.
It's a curious position for you, though, I think.
I thought he was a good player, and I think he's a good analyst.
You were very critical of him as a player. As a person, he's got a lot of questionable moments in his past.
Who doesn't? Wow. Who doesn't?
You once remarked that he only had white friends. We had, like, who knows whether that's true or not?
I go after Tommy.
Yeah.
And I'll admit it. I don't know what he does. I don't know what he does or why he's there. He might not know what I do or why I'm here. That's totally fair.
Not a bad point. Yeah.
But the Tommy just appearing and being around.
Well, you know what he is, though. There's a crew of... I actually don't know that this is the case with Tommy, but I bet it is. There's a crew of 33-year-old guys whose parents are super rich, who have embedded themselves within NBA players and NBA culture and use money to say that they are sort of like doing business things, or I have this production company, or I have this podcast company, or whatever. And that is what Tommy is, I think. And I
know
it doesn't make him
so
a bad
not
person.
Me at all.
What's that?
It's so not. It's really the antithesis of it makes me so uncomfortable to think about embedding and worming and being like, well, I'm here now.
Yep.
And I'm just as legitimate. I don't know. It always baffles me, because it's like, where do they get off? Where do they have the nerve to all of a sudden just be like smarmy producer fucking sliding into the cracks of doors that you shouldn't be able to get into?
Dude, we've had interactions with people in that world, from trying to purchase the podcast to...
No, yeah, I know.
I think we had one of them on the podcast at one point. It was... I wonder if you're going to remember it. I don't want to call it out specifically because it would be trouble for you.
I don't know. That's there just seems to be so many of those guys, and Tommy has become the face of them for me. And so, look, if he doesn't want to fuck with us, I completely understand.
That's totally fine.
I don't know what you do.
I would not want to fuck with us either.
Or why you're around.
This came from Fascista. I think that's how you pronounce the name. Dear Spike, Mike, and CJ, I have two quick questions for you guys. One about basketball, one about your business. One, end of playoff elimination game, last possession. Let's say you're down 2 or 3 points. What is your philosophy as a coach/fan? A, get the ball to your best player, let him take the shot, even with the extra attention. B, use your best player to generate an open shot for a role player or a secondary star player.
I think it's a lot of read and react. I think it depends if it's 2 or 3 points. And how much time is left. But I like if it's 2 points, obviously preferable. I love a drive, draw the defense and kick, open shooter. That's it. To just have the ball in the hands of the one player and say, like, this ball is dying in this person's hands, to me is a little bit like playing with one hand tied behind your back, and a little bit too much like Kobe mindset. It's like, make the right pass.
Let me ask you this. Let me put it in a real world.
Please.
Description for you. It's game 7, Sixers versus Bucks. Sixers are down.
This is going to end with the ball in Tobias's hands. I know.
Sixers, Bucks. There's 8 seconds left.
Yeah.
The Sixers are down 2.
Down 2. Okay.
Yep. Embiid's at the nail.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, doing his face up thing. Another person comes. He could spin away, take a fadeaway jumper.
Who's the person that comes?
What's that?
Who's the person that comes?
I don't know. Fucking Chris Middleton.
If it's Giannis and Chris Middleton, he can shoot over Chris.
And then in the corner is a wide open Tobias Harris.
Yeah.
So what you're telling me.
Yeah. I'm telling you, Tobias, cut. Please, God, cut. Cut, Tobias. This is the dunk, the moment.
What a moment! What a dunk. Can you imagine the crushing podcast afterwards as we lose to Doc Rivers and the Bucks because Tobias Harris bricked an open three.
Well, he'd pump fake it. He'd pump fake no one.
Fuck, then, man. I understand what you're saying, but like that's why I'm no, just I like, eh, fucking, you know.
But that's why I'd rather be like, I'd rather Tobias not be on the floor in that very moment.
Yeah.
If it's a gotta have it type of play, I'd rather have, you know, give me Embiid with, if say, let's say Melton is not healthy, but like Embiid, Maxi, Hield, Oubre, Batum, or maybe Lowry for one of them.
Mm.
That'd be nice for me.
And then
because Tobias is just not, that's the thing. He's not going to steal you an extra possession. He's the ultimate does not steal you an extra possession guy. And at least if you get a shot early, Batum could tap it out, which he does all the time. So, but yeah, if this season lives or dies on a Tobias wide open corner three,
yeah,
as the clock expires,
yeah,
then you know, God help us all.
Yeah, man, I know we're coming back to this moment. I know we are. And then second question: how do you guys as a podcast balance chasing trends/hot takes with what you actually think? An increasingly competitive media landscape that writes Ricky Sanchez manages to be a breath of fresh air while getting views. Love the pod.
That sounds like the beginning of like a conference.
Yeah.
Like someone is moderating a conference with us on a panel.
Yeah.
In this fast moving media landscape.
I think I have pretty like drastic opinions a lot. I either think guys suck or great, you know, I don't know. I think we could probably clip up our podcasts a little more to make them sound more like that and disingenuous, but I don't know that it helps us any because when you get to the pod, it's still the normal pod. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm very resistant after 11 fucking years to like change.
Yeah.
Anything really.
Yeah.
It's enough already.
Yeah.
We've been doing it forever. Our podcast is close to a bar mitzvah. Like we don't, it's over. We're not doing anything new.
Yeah, I don't, we're already successful and everybody seems happy with it. So
I don't think that we have to like, you know, we'll talk about stuff around the league, but the fact that we don't have to go do like, we are a Sixers podcast. And so the things around the Sixers, whether they're like real or stupid, we don't have to feel obligated to like, well, we got to talk about what, you know, Luka did last night or something. And it's just like, you get that other places. That's probably why the ceiling of this podcast is maybe lower than otherwise, whatever. But like, people know what we do. We do this shit. It's annoying, probably. But, you know, we are every bit as annoying as this fucking Sixers team. So
for a podcast that's popularity is capped, I'm pretty happy with how popular we've gotten, to be quite honest with you. It is beyond my wildest dreams. I can't believe there's so many listeners. It is stunning. It's crazy. So, and then final voicemail, 833 Lickface.
G'day, Spike, Mike, CJ, Daryl, and the rest of the crew. It's Jake calling from Melbourne, Australia here. I'm going to start off with my non-basketball related question. I the toilet at my work is right past my boss, so my boss is always going to know when I am taking a shit, so it's more than, you know, a good minute or two. My question to you guys is do I just embrace that I'm taking a shit and take my 5-10 minute break, or do I have to try and snap it off and make it a quick one? Because I'm always caught when he's sitting there that I got to make it quick, and I feel like I don't get enough time. A basketball related question, or it's more or less just my basketball thought, is that we're talking about surviving right now, and we're surviving like without Joel Embiid, and we're relying on fucking Kyle Lowry, who's almost 50, and the vet minute in Oubre. Like, I just feel like it's an indictment on this team. That I know it's he's the MVP, but like fucking surely we can do better and have like an okay team to survive without Embiid. Like, things need to change. This is ridiculous. Anyway, curious to see what you think about my poo fiasco, because it's causing me some grief. Bye.
So I think you just take as much time as you need to take. What is your boss going to call you out for going number two?
I mean, yeah, it depends. It depends the kind of vibe, workplace vibe it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's nothing wrong with not doing a little like shuffle, poo dance past his office and doing like, here I'm doing it again. Da, 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 it's time. Like, start counting. Like, you can just like, look, the boss knows you're not the only one that goes to the bathroom. The boss knows that they're right next to the toilet.
Yeah.
And so there can be an agreed, we don't need to talk about this. There could be that.
Yeah, I think so.
And you do what you got to do. The Embiid thing, it just doesn't. We've had the team that could survive a little bit without Joel.
Sure. Yeah.
Doc was a survive without Joel type of coach.
And by the way, the Ben Horford team survived without Joel. You know?
Absolutely. And I think that the ceiling of that team is lower. The ceiling of this team, I think, is maybe with the exception of the Jimmy team, just because of how good he was. I think the ceiling of this team is as high as it's ever been. And I think if Covington and Melton had been healthy, then they would have won more games in this time. I think if, you know, Tobias hadn't had a stretch of some of the worst play of his career, or Lowry had been banged up, or Batum had been banged up, like there was a lot of, it wasn't just the Joel thing. And I don't think any team would look excellent in those games without so many of those players missing. And I do think, like, yeah, have there been real clunkers? Of course, but they've hung in a bunch of games. They beat the Cavs a couple times. They probably should have won last night again. They beat the Clippers and they should have won the other one. Like, there's been good, strong performances in this time that I've been impressed by, and also some bad ones. But I don't think that you can really hold that against them.
I would largely agree. Actually, I keep passing on this voicemail for like weeks. We'll just do this one.
It's Mike.
No, you know what? I'm looking at it. It's too long. It's a minute 20. I don't want to fucking listen to it. We could just end the pod. We'll do it next time.
Wow. That's the tease.
Well, it's a Nick Nurse question, but like, it's kind of funny. We just did a poop thing, you know, do it
trust
next
your,
time.
Hey, trust your instincts.
Yeah. Speaking of Joel coming back, I would say it is time for Morey to come back. We've been talking about this, I think, before the playoffs. I think it's time for Morey to come back. Before the playoffs, and then after free agency. Because we didn't have post-trade deadline. So, Daryl, send out the bat signal. Know that you listen. Let's go. It's time to go. We know that Embiid's coming back. It's time to go. Let's go.
Okay.
That's all I got.
We got, we're back at Coach Mike season. Season starts back up on Tuesday.
I coach basketball in Los Angeles.
Coach Mike.
Coach Mike.
What you did this to that?
I ran a 1-2-1 zone.
Coach Mike ass off.
Applause. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes. Tuesday nights. And
what's the outlook for the team this year?
We'll see. You know, we made the championship three straight seasons, 1-1. The first championship, obviously, was when we had four players and the 1-2-1 zone.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel good about my performance so far. I feel like I should get a long-term, very lucrative contract, Spoelstra style, maybe. But yeah, we'll see. You know, expectations are high. We've had a couple injuries. But look, when it comes down to it, I'm not an accredited high school referee at the end of the day.
We will talk to you next time. Hopefully an Embiid return. Hopefully the next pod will be after an Embiid return, either Tuesday or Thursday. So come back, Joel. We'll talk to you next time. Are you done with TTP?
Yeah, you know, lick face.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for Plan B.